Welcome to Afterthought, a podcast series that puts our present moment into perspective and invites you to think through our world in crisis together.
I'm Dawson.
I'm Karambir.
And I'm Chris. This is Afterthought. In this episode, part one of our two-part concluding summary to the series, we return to themes of how to think our present world and its multiple crises. For example, the notion of thinking in terms of different timescales, and the notion of a compassionate reading versus an egocentric one. We return to some discussion of spiritual practices as opposing the ego, and the whole difference between a sitting with mentality that waits rather than an active problem-solving mentality. We also recur to some touched upon themes from the series, such as community versus technology, of resources rather than solutions, and of critical thinking as opposing polarized thinking. And we finish the episode with some discussion on how to think evolution and technology together.
Welcome to Afterthought. We are approaching the end of this podcast series. One of the things that we have tried to do in this series so far is try to explain our contemporary world, which is in crisis, into perspective by looking at various different scales. And I think there's about five or six different scales which we have looked at in a bit more detail. We started by looking at COVID as kind of accelerated version of all the scales, of all the other scales. For example, if we look at Homo sapiens and our evolutionary history as a species, we see that we emerge out of Africa and then take a few thousands of years to actually spread all over the globe. So that's one scale. And then we looked at Holocene as a different scale during which, as a species, then we actually developed agriculture and technology and settled down and started developing civilization. So that was another scale that we looked at. And then we looked at modernity and Axial Age as two different scales and their challenges and their inputs to our society and our history, as well as great acceleration. So lots of different scales that we have tried to use to help explain our world in crisis. Now, one of the reasons that we have tried to use these number of scales is that we wanted to push our listeners to kind of think outside of our normal way of thinking. We tend to think about our world from a certain specific point of view, from a certain set of lens through which we think of world as kind of going in a certain direction in a very linear way, in a very stabilized way, but when it's actually not. And I hope that another thing that the scale thinking has does is that it has helped us, like I mentioned, get a more compassionate reading of our world in crisis. And I think some scales would have done that more so than the others, such as our evolutionary history of our species, as a scale probably would have done more for that particular purpose than some of the other scales. So in this episode, let's look at a little bit more on the side of the compassionate reading and how we can use all these different scales to look at our world in crisis and to develop a bit more compassion reading for our species.
Yeah, well, I certainly think we need these things to break us out of our certain habitual modes of thinking. Like, we've talked about how sort of like these mythologies govern our thought, and we have these systems through which we've thought. And there are very various ways that we can break ourselves out of there. I mean, go out on a dark night and look out at the stars and just realize how small you are. Or you can take history and look back at like how these different powers have governed during their time and how these different ideologies have formed the world we live in now. And just looking at these things through different perspectives seems to matter in terms of, well, breaking us out of the little games that we play, you know, the little political games or the us versus them, the tribal games. And just allowing, I definitely think that compassion is a direction that we can find from this.
And compassion, I mean, the opposite here, to really what is the connection of compassion to scale? Well, the opposite of compassion ultimately is little and petty and egocentric. So we have these mythologies that seem very big, but we take something very small scale and egocentric that I care about and blow it into this huge proportion. Well, that gets completely undercut when, for the nice example you use, you go out and look at the night sky and see the stars. I mean, how does it feel to be utterly insignificant as you gaze at the stars? I hear very few people saying, oh, I hate this, it's scary, I wish I was more significant. Like, almost everybody considers it an awesome experience, right? Or here in Northern Canada, you can see the Northern Lights. Like, it's partly awesome because you stop thinking about yourself, which is the right perspective to have most of the time. I'm not saying you should never think about yourself, but really the odds of that are pretty slim. The problem is the opposite. We think about ourselves too much, too often, too. So putting these different, and you're right, Karen Bear, we had a bunch of different scales. One of the reasons we chose coronavirus is because it's the most obvious thing happening across the whole world to all of us individually. But it was also at an experiential scale, something we can all kind of get our mind around because it's only happened in the last number of months. As soon as you move to the very next scale up, which we used, which was great acceleration, well, it's no longer at an experiential scale. Now it's at the scale of your whole life, assuming you live to be about around 7 years old or so. Well, that's a very different way. It's hard to think from the perspective of a lifetime, especially if you're quite young. Only really old people who are near the ends of their lives can usually think from the perspective of a lifetime for the most part. So that's quite a move to move from just this year and these months to a lifetime scale. As soon as you move beyond the Great Acceleration to the next scale, which we used, which was modernity, going back to 1500 approximately, well, now we're talking like multi-generational. Now we're talking about like a civilization, modern European civilization. Well, of course, you can't really think that. Like a historian can, to some extent, if they're a modern European historian. But even that is like a major effort requiring many, many years of study to get there. And they don't really live at that scale, and they certainly don't experience at that scale. And then the next leap we made from that was back to the Axial Age, where you could say that there is now a thinking at a certain scale. They start to think at a universal scale rather than a local one. They start realizing that claims around spirit or God or ethics or morality, in fact, apply to all human beings, regardless of skin color or gender or region or class, or which all sounds very modern, but in fact, it's 2,500 years old. Now, we didn't have to choose those scales. Part of the reason we chose them is because that's what some of our, you know, in my case, that's my knowledge where I was drawing from. Is it possible to choose a very different sort of example at scale? For example, pandemics. Yes, you could. If you compared today to the 1918 flu or to the Black Plague in the 14th century in Europe, I mean, it would also be very instructive. It would help to put pandemics into perspective today. Whenever you move out of that very small little game egocentric scale, I think it immediately builds some compassion in because it suddenly relativizes your, not just the scale you live at, but also the scale of the anxiety you feel at. You start to realize that, you know, in my favorite example that I've often used lecturing is, you know, referring to myself as a teenager about to go out to a party, realizing I have a big pimple on my forehead, right? And, you know, it's like, my world is at an end, right? Like, it's terribly exaggerated. Of course, it's not your world, and we all laugh because they're teenagers. But notice, the world has egocentrically constricted to, like, this pimple on the forehead that's going to ruin everything. Well, of course, it's not the end of the world, and everyone else just laughs. Can we laugh about global climate change and that our fears that the world is going to end? No, we can't. But if you were to take a sufficient enough perspective away from that, you can say, well, yeah, these things happen and they've happened before. And you can relativize it, I don't think to the same extent, and I wouldn't want to. It's worthwhile to make fun of a teenage pimple being the whole world for a teenager. It's a little different when we're talking about global climate change. And now the fact that we are affecting change on such a scale
that we're doing collectively in this moment. Suddenly, and that's why we are in that's part of the unprecedentedness of our time, is the egocentric small-scale anxiety is actually, like planets lining up in astrology, is actually two scale of all of these other historical and evolutionary scales. This moment of the 21st century is comparable to the emergence of Homo sapiens in Africa 200,000 years ago, is comparable to other evolutionary events of, you know, the emergence, and you would know better than I, Karen Beer, in terms of these different, you know, epochs where, you know, mammals first emerge or vertebrae from invertebrae. Or like, these are like evolutionary turning points that are massive. Well, in fact, our egocentric concerns today are in fact lining up with evolutionarily massive scale turning points. And that is unprecedented and frankly unwanted. It's not nice to know that we make that much difference, because it fills us with anxiety and horror. And flip it around, and there is a lot of compassion in seeing like how insignificant you are and your ego is, and why did I get so caught up in this little game? Right? And a key thought line we've been following is that power often latches on to these things at massive scale. And when you add power at that sort of scale, which is not the scale an individual lives at, it has this terrible distorting effect. And that's filled with danger, and that's one of the issues, the challenges facing us today. The power of a certain economic system, of a certain historical system, of a certain mythology that goes with that around individualism and unlimited economic growth and all of that has reached the forefront and dominates what people consider normal. But ultimately the motivation for that is much too egocentric. And we need to explore very different ways of living and being that refuse that mythological power, that actual political power and economic power, and ultimately refuse the sort of egocentric power that has for us, that it feeds certain desires we have for security and control. And instead, you know, once you think that thought line through, you sort of say, it has come to an end, and I want it to end now. I want something different to begin. I want a different way of thinking, a different way of being, a different kind of economy, a different sort of technology, a different mythology to come into being. But here we're stuck. We don't know what the future is going to be. None of us ever know the future. We can make some predictions. The point of this series, in many ways, is not to make those predictions, but to help us try to think through the present to the point where we say, well, that isn't at an end. What's the new beginning? And between one end and the new beginning is we need a transformation, like being in a cocoon. And COVID, the economic lockdown, has forced us into this sort of cocoon phase where I pray we come out of it transformed.
Well, that is sort of the hope and the goal of this podcast, is that as we sort of, we sit with these issues and we think these issues through on a deeper, more critical level, that it will be transformational. You know, we won't just end up playing those same political games or, you know, I mean, you look at the discourse these days and it just seems to be back and forth, back and forth. It's so polarized. But you know, if we take this time to sit with these things and critically think about them, maybe there's a chance that we can think outside of these issues. And that is transformational, because it changes the whole system upon which you're thinking and you're basing your ideas. And the way that we had sort of, one of the ways that we had advocated for this kind of transformation is we had talked about different practices of contemplation and other kinds of spiritual practices and meditation, and what it means to think beyond these ego structures, right? Whereas when you're in an ego consciousness, you're thinking always is in terms of the anxieties that ego feels, right? Because the ego is supposed to keep you alive.
Or the pleasures.
Right, right.
Because the ego is supposed to make you feel happy. And no one would argue with that unless you can start to see where, you know, in the example we used earlier in the podcast, like it is the affluent who are the cause of climate change. Why? Well, to feed certain desires. Are they the desires we need? Are they the desires we should have? And suddenly you're in the domain of spirituality. So you're absolutely right. The spiritual practices are meant to transform our egocentrism out of that. You work through the ego in order to get beyond it. Now, it doesn't mean you give up your anxieties, but the nature of your anxieties transform as the nature of your ego transforms. And to You mentioned polarization as you started that off. I mean, nothing shows egocentrism better than these polarized, useless debates and arguments. And part of the hope of this podcast is that rather than, you know, it's not like news exactly, although we're talking about lots of newsworthy events, the whole notion of thought lines and thinking through is meant to provide a sort of contrast to a lot of what you get in social media or news today, where it's very surface, it's very immediate, it's often quite simple in order to like hit you with some information. But it isn't information with perspective. It isn't putting things into scale. When you scale things into their proper proportions, well, that's healthy. That's good. A lot of our thinking is confused. The notion of thinking through is instead, let's be deeper and slower and more complex in our thinking. Let's be more critical, by which I don't mean negative and criticize, but I mean, let's think both sides of these rather than let's just take one side and polarize it and whoever holds the other side is our enemy. No, we don't actually have enemies here except for ourselves and our own ignorance and our own egos. So we want to counter that polarization with critical thinking. We want to counter those simplifications, of which there's far too many, with a more intricate story that's more layered in terms of scales. We want to counter that kind of reactionary stuff, which is always, again, the mark of the ego, that tends to foreclose possibilities because the ego feels threatened by them or uncertain because of them or insecure because of them. We want to foreclose. We don't want that foreclosure. Instead, we want sitting with, letting be, waiting to see what comes, all of which you've got to hold your ego down for that. And we mentioned mindfulness, right, which is, you know, the great contribution of Buddhism in terms of a meditative practice. Hinduism also has deep, think of yoga, which is a deep meditative practice, and they have other meditations as well. Christianity has a deep tradition of contemplation that's been unfortunately somewhat forgotten. But there's forms of Christian meditation and centering prayer and Christian contemplative practice that are powerful and deep and do similar things in terms of working on the ego. And all of that is aimed at a transformation at the level of the ego, but it would transform how you talk and think.
And I think you guys can speak more to this, but I think another great tool, so to say, or resource that help us hold back on our ego and kind of come to the table with open-mindedness is the small-scale community involvement, which is something we have explored in the last couple episodes, that when you are in a group of friends and community and you're coming to this group with open-mindedness and deeply caring about the issues surrounding you, you are coming with the degree of vulnerability, knowing that this is something that's going to affect you and your family and friends, and you don't know what to do about it. So you're kind of like asking everyone to kind of help you think through this so that you can all then at the end, hopefully come to some sort of understanding about the crisis at hand, pull your resources together and deal with it.
Yeah, well, deal with some of the symptoms of it. I mean, the coronavirus, again, is an exemplar of this. Is it a problem to be solved? Yes. But for most of us, we can't solve it at all. I mean, if a vaccine can come along, that might be a solution, right? And the whole technological problem-solving mentality is a very ego-serving mentality. Beautiful example you just gave of when we come together and think together and what will start to happen is not that we solve the problem, but we begin to transform how the ego experiences the problem and the nature of the problem. And it doesn't mean that the community doesn't have anxiety, but to participate in communal anxiety is very different than to feel a personal egocentric anxiety about this. It becomes much less of a problem to be solved and more, well, I need to figure out how to live with this constructively or well or to the best of my ability, which might not even be all that good, but all I can expect right now is to the best of my ability, and that's all I should aim for. And in fact, I'm sharing with others the same problem, and it makes the problem easier to endure. No, you're not solving it, but to make a problem easier to endure is an advantage. And in doing so, it may start to give you some insights into these alternative ways of understanding the problem. Climate change is certainly, you know, has similarities to the coronavirus. and our political crises and social crises, most of those are of the sort that it's not a simple technological fix at all, but it requires a very different way of living together, but also, you know, being together and thinking together and how we talk about these things together.
I have a question for the two of you. That do you think then to think about a problem purely at a technological level, even though you can be putting all your resources, your time and effort into it, do you think then try to solve a problem just purely from a technological point of view, then is essentially egocentric?
Well, it's certainly, I would say it's definitely ego-driven, right? And it's, the ego feels insecure, and so it will put its hopes in the fast solution and what appears to make it feel the most in control.
Yeah, and to be in some degree of control is utterly natural and evolutionarily. Like, to give up all control sounds like insanity to me. But we're not talking here in those extremes of all control or no control. We're trying to scale what control should be in a healthy way. And so Dawson's point is totally right, except we can add to that that when you describe technology in that way, it's mostly a very modern Western that is now globalized in this contemporary technological, industrial, economic way. There are lots of other societies who have technology and they do know technology gives them some control, but because their overarching mythology or worldview doesn't think of technology in that sort of paramount way, then the technologies might be ego-serving, but they might be ego-serving in sort of healthy ways. Like, surely a hunting society should have good tools for hunting, right? Like, it would be stupid for them to say, well, we don't want our spears to be sharp because that will make our hunting less effective. I mean, that makes no sense at all. They need to hunt to survive, to live. So there's nothing wrong, but if somehow it gets out of proportion because of historical development such that it creates difficulties for the community or that way of life, well, then we have a problem here. And in back to, you know, Karen Beer, your whole background as an evolutionary, your interest in evolutionary biology and your environmental studies background, I the notion that there's a lot we have inherited from our evolutionary heritage, which is natural and good, but then human use of that puts it out of proportion or into the wrong scale. We have numerous examples of that. We have examples of that when civilizations collapse. We have examples of that when civilizations get really skewed in terms of injustice or inequality or problems or warfare or excessive violence or excessive discrimination against a particular group. There's numerous examples of this all through the history. In every case, the premise is a natural evolved capacity we have that we've then somehow skewed into some unnatural proportion.
Right. So it seems to me that, like, right, like the technology piece isn't right or wrong to say, like, in of itself, but it's a matter of how you're relating to that technology. And is that technology, that idea of a solution from technology, simply allowing you to continue with doing whatever you want or pretending that the issue doesn't exist because, oh, it's solved and I don't have to think about it anymore? If it's forming that kind of a solution psychologically for you, then that's not a solution that we want in this kind of a global crisis, because this is something we need to think deeply about and actually come together for a solution, right?
Yeah, and insofar as the technology is key, and here it's the modern, initially modern Western, now this globalized technology, insofar as it is key for a lot of our political inequalities, right? We know who wins the wars, right? The best technology. A lot of our social inequalities, right? Who are the most at risk from the effects of climate change is the vulnerable and disempowered, and they lack the technology. And what is the cause of climate change, right? Technology is key for all of those great accelerators. So that form of technology feeds a certain form of ego, and both have to go. It does not mean we get rid of technology, but we're going to have to find ways to subordinate the technology to different ends that we wish to achieve. And to have a technology that is somehow commensurate with communal goals rather than these sort of global universal economy goals, would be a very different mode of technology. And I'm quite sure from the reading I've done that those are also much more ecologically appropriate, ecologically respecting technologies.
I think one thing that's helpful for me to kind of think about, how do you find the right balance, so to say, between technology and your focus on holistic way of thinking about the problem, is that the term technology in itself kind of entails this connotation that it's something out there, as in like mechanical fix, as a materialistic fix. But perhaps to make it broader, we can think about innovative thinking, maybe, which would include coming to the table to talk to your community about an issue. In which case, it is doing partly the same thing that you would do when you're thinking about a technology, which is thinking innovatively, thinking about something that's disturbing you or your environment or your surrounding. But it's not as in like, oh, I can deal with this on my own with the use of few materials.
As soon as you bring in a technology that has to somehow respect community, yeah, you've moved towards a more traditional view rather than a modern one. And in this case, I would say it's not a step back, which is very much how the modern narrative always works. You've stepped back. Here, I would say we have to step forward into tradition, meaning that what is tradition? It is a subordinating of certain sort of potentials to a more, in this case, communal, using that example, or if you like, a more holistic sort of understanding of society as a whole, or society within an ecology or an environment as a whole. And it seems to me most traditions, being slow to develop and emerge, did that. The modern and the greatly accelerated ultra-modern times we live in are not doing that at all. And in this sense, tradition gives us resources of, here's a way where community and technology work together. And there are lots of examples we could find if we start to look for those. Similarly, spiritual practices are resources within traditions that we can retrieve. We're not moving back when we do that. We're identifying a need and a problem that's there that needs to be addressed. And why reinvent the wheel when, in fact, there's a perfectly good wheel already invented that we can apply? Now, in retrieving it and applying it in the present, it might end up becoming or looking like a different wheel or a different community-based technology, because we are in the 21st century, not the 18th or the 15th or 5th century BC.
Right. And I think for our listeners, that's one of the things that we will explore in the next episode, that what would a community look like in the 21st century, like you mentioned, right? Like we live in a very globalized world. So this actually has been our background discussions for the last little bit, too, that people move around quite a lot these days. So what would your today's community look like? What would coming together look like in our time and period?
Yeah, well, the challenge is, if we take coronavirus seriously, and we take it seriously as symptomatic of climate crisis, and remember we've got a 2030 deadline according to the IPCC, the notion that we got to come out of the coronavirus and the lockdown, not returning to business as usual, but some form of building back better, as a phrase that gets used a lot, and I think appropriately, is, yes, we are going to have to realize that that kind of massive global mobility is cannot be continued. And what is the alternative going to be? Well, certainly local community is going to be a key ingredient in that. And how local community would interact, on the one hand, going downscale with the individual ego to work within that. On the other hand, moving big with a global ecological understanding and the transformation of our history out of this modern and now ultra-modern global setting is the challenge facing us.